Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Today we're joined by Nina Monckton, who is Head of Data Strategy, Advancing Analytics and Data Science at AXA Health. First of all, welcome to the show. It's really good to have you join us today. Really looking forward to this conversation. I think, you know, we're going to be talking a lot about data naturally, and this might be the geekiest thing I've ever said, but I'm really into data.
You fall into one of two camps then. You're either the person who loves data or the person who tells me that they really couldn't get on with maths at school.
That sounds about right. So, you know, to get into the conversation, before we get into that, the depths of that conversation, could you give us a bit of insight into the business, AXA Health, and where you fit into the world of data?
Yeah. AXA Health is one of the organisations that is part of bigger AXA, as people know, as an insurance company. We provide health insurance and health and wellbeing services and also employee assistance programmes. And we are the second largest health insurer in the UK by market share. So I moved to AXA Health in April this year. So I've straddled two companies this year, both during COVID crisis, which is interesting. And I started there as the head of data strategy. So prior to that, I was working as the chief insight officer for the NHS Business Services Authority, who basically provide back office transactional services to the NHS, and they cover £36 billion worth of NHS funding of the activities that they do. And in that role, I was leading the organisation's data function and driving their data strategy. So that's kind of where I am at in terms of data.
Sure. So what's your career history up to this point? I mean, how did you get into this?
I started my career as a statistician. So I've always been interested in, you know, really driving value out of data and using data to have that deep understanding of what's going on. So, and I started my career back when computers weren't as good as they are today. And it's really interesting because I think a lot of the techniques that that I was using back in the sort of early noughties are the techniques that are still used today, albeit your computer doesn't crash because you've got the advantage of being able to offload things to the cloud to do the big jobs. And there's more data available. So whereas before it was very much reliant on small data set samples to draw conclusions, it's now just, you know, everything is most of the time you can chuck everything in. So so I suppose, yeah, my guiding principle throughout my career has been getting value out of data.
Excellent. And what strikes me is that, you know, since the noughties, developments have changed dramatically. So along your career, how have you kept up with those developments to stay ahead of the curve?
I think the biggest and possibly the best way, albeit possibly the most annoying way as well, has been technology companies themselves.
Right.
And they're probably, for me, the best source of understanding what's going on and where things are going. And depending on who you're partnering with and who your technology supplier is, will give you that view as to what's going on. So I would definitely say that they've been one of the biggest sources for me in terms of where things are going.
These days, what resources do you rely on? I mean, day to day, do you like kind of read a lot of books, or do you listen to a lot of podcasts, or what are your go to resources?
Podcasts are great.
Yeah.
I think now at the moment with COVID, there are an awful lot of conferences that previously I wouldn't have gone to purely for the fact I would have had to have travelled to them, that now are much easier to access, which has been absolutely fantastic. So conferences are a great source. Still the partners are a really great source of understanding. LinkedIn is useful. Yeah. You know, it is, if you join the right groups, follow the right groups, there's some really, really good material that people publish on there. And I also think that the big consultancy companies are a really good place to look and see what are they saying are the latest technology drivers and what's happening, particularly in certain industries. They're very good for that.
Yeah, interesting. And on that topic, what are some of the latest data innovations and what have you been working on recently?
So recently, this is really dull, but recently I've been quite tied up with data privacy and ethics and all of that type of good foundational stuff that you need to do before you start rushing into doing data analytics. So that's been some of the stuff which probably isn't that exciting. Before I left the NHS, we just launched an open data portal.
Right.
So that was interesting. That was opening up the GP prescribing data to basically to the public.
Amazing.
So I suppose what the fascinating thing is looking at and starting to think about how we put data together, basically to give value to people in terms of their health and well-being. So how can we look at the impact of the services that we're providing and really demonstrate that they are giving value to people?
There's been a massive rise in you know, using data to provide personalized healthcare at the minute. Do you think that we're on a tipping point where this is going to be, you know, expected?
I absolutely think so. I think the sort of the breakthrough in looking at is certainly on the rise. What I do see, though, and what I think where the biggest gains are going to come from using AI and IoT to really support people to be healthy. So rather than looking at that prevention rather than cure, and that I think is where the most exciting innovation is coming, and particularly for the elderly, you know, that being able to use data from simple things like, you know, how are they using their electricity? Mm. Can we guess forecast that somebody's going to fall over? Are they at risk? All that type of thing is now happening, and it's that I think that's really exciting. I think that's a real lovely use of technology to sort of keep people safe.
Mm. It's incredible, really, isn't it? You know, I've spoken to a few people who are in this similar space to you, and it just blows my mind how amazing what people are doing now in terms with technology. And it really is incredible. But we can't go through the podcast without mentioning that you won the 2019 Woman in IT Transformation Leader of the Year Award.
I did.
I mean, that's incredible. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that came from a project that I did with the NHS Business Services Authority, and it was probably quite a few years in the making, actually, because it basically involved moving the prescribing reporting, which was very much done at a count level per item, into a new system where we were basically collecting everything at a transaction level. So we had we weren't throwing away the patient information anymore. We were keeping that information, which took us to a completely different level in terms of the analysis that we could then do. And then we basically took the management information reporting that was being done through this legacy technology into a cloud environment and rolled it out to every single clinical commissioning group, a hospital trust, and others that were responsible for looking after prescribing budgets or basically prescribing budgets. And and so that was in essence the project. But the really lovely thing that came out of it, apart from the fact that the data was now so much richer, was that we were then able to start looking at what individuals were being prescribed. And not only did as we worked with Wessex Area Health Science Network, and we created some metrics around polypharmacy, which is where people are getting like 10 or more medications in one go. And that, looking at that and creating those metrics with that clinical input, actually we demonstrated that, having published that data, we were able to demonstrate that we'd reduced the risk that people were receiving before we started publishing. And so Wessex actually, with us, we won the HSJ Patient Safety Award last year as well. So it was just phenomenal. It wasn't a hugely technical in terms of difficult, but it was just taking that step to get that data from a scenario where it was kind of really locked down into a scenario where let's open this up a bit and be able to do more with it. And, you know, to do that, there was quite a bit of to-ing and fro-ing about governance and, was it the right thing to do? It saved tens of thousands of lives. Yes, it was the right thing to do. I had a great team of people behind me doing it, but it basically unlocked a lot of value from that data.
Definitely. And do you think that this is a really loaded question, but would any of this have been capable or possible without the cloud? If we could imagine a world without the cloud?
Honestly, yes, but it would have taken a lot longer and it would have been more expensive.
Do you think that, the cost of using the cloud is really, really cheap? Do you think that that must have a huge part to play in these new innovations that are happening?
Oh, absolutely. And when it comes to just having that sort of comfort that because it's in a cloud data center, it's secure. It's if anything, you're fairly certain nothing's going to go wrong because they're going to have failover and all the rest of it. So, it is really good for that. It's fantastic for performance. The fact that it will just sort of scale itself up and down as you need it. It's really good.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the future of data now. What can you see happening in the future? More innovations in terms of like cloud usage and things like that, or is there anything else that you'd like to see change, or is there anything in the industry that concerns you?
I think possibly ethics. So the ethical use of data and data privacy. And I think it's probably quite easy to fall foul of data privacy, because until you really get under the skin of it, you don't necessarily know that you're doing something wrong. So I know, having just gone through in great detail with one of the projects I've currently been working on, it's legal stuff, so it's all very, very technical, and having your average data scientist understand all the technicalities of the Data Protection Act and any other legislation that might be overseeing what you can and can't do with that data is quite scary. But I suppose for me, there's two questions that I always come back and ask myself when thinking about ethics and data privacy. One of them is, could there be any unintended consequences from what I'm doing? Is one of the questions. And then I suppose the other question is, if somebody was to overhear me talking about this project in a pub, would I be comfortable with that? Mm. And you know, and those are some of my sort of guiding principle questions when it comes to data privacy yeah. and ethics. It's like, if I'm okay with those questions, then it's probably all right.
That's really interesting how you've come to those. And so I'm thinking back to, you know, there was the GDPR legislation that happened not so long ago. And I'm thinking, you know, I've heard rumours that in the future now, because everyone's moving to AI and machine learning, there's going to be, you know, another legislation that's going to happen with that. Can you see that happening?
I think there will. I think there will, because the set it up and leave it and just not have that sort of transparency around what decisions are being made is, I suppose, it is quite worrying. And the making sure that you're checking for your drift, you're not discriminating against particular groups. And I think as well, even we know that even with like machines can be quite biased because our data is quite biased. So I think yeah. there was somebody looked at, you know, if there was a person standing in a kitchen or near a washing machine, then an AI would assume it was a woman. So, you know, there's like really silly things like that. But because yeah. unless the data that you're pushing into a machine is actually unbiased. And I think that's where, and this is one of the things that I think is probably a bit undervalued is, and I would say this because I'm an ex-statistician, but is that statistics and actually really, really robustly validating what data am I using and could I be introducing bias into this because of the data that I'm feeding in? Yeah, so that's but I think, yeah, you're right, that there will be some sort of legislation coming through about, the EU are certainly looking at it.
I'm interested in how you look into data objectively, because when you look into data, it's very much within the eye of the beholder. You can kind of see the answer that you want to see. So would you say it's a skill to look into data objectively?
I do. I think that one of the things that's always sort of spoken about as something that data scientists need to be able to do is to be able to do storytelling. And I think I seriously think that one of the other skills that a data scientist needs is, am I telling the right story? And that questioning of, you know, how are you presenting the data, and what should you be presenting the data? So I had this conversation with a data scientist, because they were presenting some information and they created a hugely lovely dashboard, but they were presenting averages which were massively skewed because there were like so few in the sample, like three, and one of the things in the it was really skewing it, and I'm not sure that people take it seriously enough, but that you've got to tell it in a really informed way, and you have to have like almost tried to disprove yourself as well as prove yourself. It's a bit like the Sherlock Holmes thing, when, what is it he says, when everything that's impossible has been, or possible has been ruled out, then look at the impossible type thing. But that's not right. But anyway, it's along those lines. It's yes, you can come at things in a very, very biased way and find the result you want. And it's sort of stepping back from that. And even really understanding how has this data even been generated in the first place, because there's going to be some sort of bias in how that data has been created, and how do you adjust for that and take that into account.
Do you think there's anything that's underestimated in the industry? I mean, looking at data objectively, I would say, is one of them, but is there anything else?
I think one of the things that it is possibly still a bit undervalued, particularly in the exec teams, is having somebody who really understands data in exec teams. I think that if you've got an organization with a person who really gets it, they will definitely be doing more with data than an organization that doesn't. And that's just like common sense, isn't it, really? But I mean, other than the solid understanding of statistics and the ethics and privacy stuff, I don't think there are any other undervalued things.
So I'm interested now about kind of your career and your career history and a bit of career reflection and advice, if you don't mind. So if you can think back to when you started your career, is there anything that you wish you were told back then that you've had to go on and learn the hard way?
I think that the thing that I wish I'd been a bit more confident with is asking the stupid question. And I guess that as I've got more senior in my roles, I've kind of not worried about asking the stupid question, but I wish that perhaps I felt more confident asking when I was younger. But I think it's really refreshing when you're in a meeting and somebody says something and you think, what the hell is that? And then the yeah. most senior person in the room says, what is that? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, having that understanding that it's okay to not know things sometimes. And I think the other thing I'd probably want to have known is always negotiate.
Right.
whether it's with partners, colleagues, job offers, or not to the point that you're winning and they're losing, but you know, to a point where you both feel quite happy with the outcome. I think that's the other bit of advice I wish I'd been given.
That's great. Yeah, and that applies to like
everything in life, not just data.
Everything in life. Yeah, exactly.
Which is much the annoyance of my family, because I'd always go into a shop and start trying to negotiate.
Really? So I think, you know, I've got a question that might wrap us up. So data and technology, they're changing business and the economy and society. What do you see as the biggest opportunity emerging from this?
Well, I think from the perspective where I'm sitting now in terms of working for a health insurer, certainly, as we've discussed before, the deployment of technology in the well-being rather than in the health recovery space is a really interesting opportunity, and I think is going to significantly change the way that not just, I mean, the traditional NHS, I don't know how long it's going to take to catch on, but certainly health insurers will catch on to this fairly quickly. And also smart working is fabulous because, you know, it really helps with diversity. It removes, if we get it right, it removes that constraint that we currently have around needing people within a commutable distance of an office. And that's only a good thing for everybody, as we're all starting to fight for the very, very scarce resources in the data and AI and technology space.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I've never really considered, well-being over recovery. You know, it's that's really innovative, and I can absolutely see that having a big change in this area. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, that was a really interesting chat. Thanks for being, you know, so open and informative and just providing a really good conversation.
No worries.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.